Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 4th, 2020. From Page. Peyton addresses vote on mask ordinance by Caitlin Randall. CRANDLE at MRT.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton on Thursday stood by his decision last week to vote against a mask ordinance, saying he and the other council members who voted down the item have clear consciences regarding that and other decisions they've made. Peyton's remark came during Thursday's Unified Command Team press conference, which was held 2 days after the Odessa City Council voted unanimously to extend Odessa Mayor David Turner's mask order for businesses. When asked about the Odessa Council's decision, Peyton said he wouldn't speculate on why that city had taken a different approach to addressing COVID-19 pandemic. "I won't speak to what Odessa is doing," he said. "I'll speak to what our police chief told us, which was how low they are on their police force." He said Midland Police Chief Seth Herman has expressed concern that assigning officers to follow up on reports of residents not wearing masks or businesses not enforcing mask wearing would take officers away from other duties. The Midland City Council on November 30th voted down a mask ordinance for the second time in as many weeks. The ordinance, considered most recently, would have required businesses to post signage asking customers to wear masks or face a $500 fine. It would have been enforced by Midland Code Compliance rather than the police department, but Peyton said Thursday that using code enforcement would have been more unenforceable than using police officers. Code enforcement is not in any way, shape, or form equipped to pull off a task like that, even if they were fully staffed. It really was not something that was doable in the short term or the long term. Peyton said he expects the council will continue considering measures related to COVID-19 and make decisions on a week-by-week basis because the pandemic is a moving target. Following a question during Thursday's press conference about criticisms he and the rest of the council have received, Peyton said, "My conscience is clear, and I would say the conscience is clear of our council as well with the decisions we're making and the things we're doing." The total number of COVID cases in Midland County surpassed 10,700 on Wednesday, and Midland Health confirmed Thursday the county's 149th and 150th deaths. Budgets, redistricting are top challenges for lawmakers. MOTRAN hosts online forum for what region can expect by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. The eyes of the Permian Basin will be on Austin and Washington, D.C. as new legislative sessions begin early next year amid the uncertainty wrought by the COVID-19 pandemic. The Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance on Thursday offered an online forum examining what the Permian Basin can expect next year. Congressman Mike Conaway of Midland, who is retiring after 15 years representing Texas's 11th district, said Congress must meet the challenge by passing an omnibus spending bill to avoid a government shutdown on December 11th, followed by work on the 2022 budget. Reauthorizing defense spending is also a priority. Conaway also said unspent funds from earlier COVID-19 relief packages could be repurposed to meet current needs. Another multi-trillion dollar round of spending is, in my view, not the right way to go at it. Conaway was presented with an engraved brass railroad bell that replicates those used on steam engines in honor of his efforts to boost transportation in the region. He said serving in the House has been an honor and he had a wonderful time doing so. "Thank you for letting me do something I've loved doing. Thank you for the privilege," he said. Transportation and redistricting will be two major topics of the new Congress, said August Pfluger, who was elected last month to succeed Conaway. "Those two topics are obviously important to rural America and to our part of the world." He pledged to support the Permian Basin oil and gas industry in Congress, supporting needs like new pipelines and, on a statewide level, access to improved data. His commitment to energy security is critically important, and I'm already laying the groundwork to ensure I advocate for the fight for a critical industry. I look forward to being a partner with the Railroad Commission. State Representative Dave Phelan, the presumptive incoming speaker, said, "We will be in session on January 12th. It will look a lot different than in the past." He told the more than 11,300 people watching via Zoom and on Facebook Live that details between the Texas House and Senate are still being worked out in person-to-person meetings and public access to the Capitol building. But he said public access in some form is important. "We can't vote on legislation that impacts the lives of 30 million people without hearing from those 30 million people." Phelan said the focus of upcoming session will be fulfilling the constitutional duty of crafting and balancing a state budget that can be certified by the Comptroller of Public Accounts. That task will be made more difficult because of the sharp decline in revenues caused by the pandemic. "We're not out of the economic downturn. Things are looking better. We're still highly diversified, but we're not out of the budget deficit by any means." Legislators will still have to find a way to meet their commitments on infrastructure and public education funding, he said, as well as meeting the needs of the estimated 1,000 people who move to Texas daily. A second key issue this year will be redistricting, which will follow the release of census figures expected in April. Phelan said it will be important to protect rural representation as districts are redrawn. "Even amid the challenges caused by the pandemic, the session will be successful if we take care of the nuts and bolts issues," said State Rep. Brooks Landgraf of Odessa. "Not just the budget, but also prioritizing where we allocate those precious resources." "Progress has been made in investing in infrastructure and public education," he said, "and that momentum can't be lost, because once it is, in this business, when you lose momentum on critical aspects of what you do at the state level, it's difficult to regain. We need to maintain progress on those investments, but also in rural broadband access and connectivity, which has such a tremendous impact on the emerging technologies of healthcare, education, and oil and gas. Those must be prioritized in the legislature as we make those difficult decisions." For her part, Christy Craddock, chairman of the Railroad Commission, said she looks forward to working with Phelan and Pfluger. Looking ahead, she said the agency's budget will be a priority. Since the agency is fee-based, she said its revenues have been impacted by the decline in oil and gas activity. Craddock said she especially hopes to keep funding for the agency's information technology upgrades, a process she said will take 6 to 8 years, but is already reaping benefits for the agency and the industry. A strong Railroad Commission is also needed to help push back against potentially harmful environmental initiatives coming out of Washington. Despite the funding challenges facing legislators, hopefully they'll remember oil and gas is 35% of the state economy, and it's not going away anytime soon. Agriculture also brings in a lot of state income, and the Permian Basin sits right in the middle of those revenue streams, so it should be a priority for legislators. She called for support of infrastructure such as Gulf Coast ports, pipelines, and roads such as Interstate 14, which would extend from Odessa across 5 states into Georgia. Moving Permian Basin oil and gas to market is critical. The oil and gas industry brought in $14.5 billion last year. A lot of that comes out of the Permian Basin. So we need our fair share to ensure we're ready to go for the next 20 to 50 years, she said. This industry is not going away. It will look different, but it is not going away. Myers. MMH will be the distribution site for vaccine. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstMP.com. Midland Health President and CEO Russell Byers said the Food and Drug Administration will meet on Thursday of next week to consider the application from Pfizer about its COVID-19 vaccine, and that could result in the vaccination of health care workers as early as January. He said Thursday during a unified command meeting that Pfizer is positioning its doses across the country and will be ready to deploy them when the FDA provides permission. Midland Memorial Hospital will be a distribution site, he said. We've ordered and expect delivery at any moment an ultra-low temperature freezer to store large quantities of the vaccine here on site. We are expecting and we want to manage the expectations of the community. The vaccine will be intended for healthcare workers first at the direction of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He said that the second population in all likelihood will be nursing home patients who are very vulnerable to hospitalization and severe disease if they are COVID-19 positive. And then once the supplies are adequate to vaccinate healthcare workers and nursing home patients, we would expect to distribute it to the larger community. That's going to take several months to accomplish. So we'll ask for your patience as the vaccine comes. We're expecting the likelihood of even getting enough vaccine initially to cover our whole workforce is not very high. Myers said that the vaccine will require 2 doses. He said there are other vaccines that have or are expected to make their request to the FDA not long after Pfizer, including Moderna. So by the end of the year, it's very likely that we'll have 2 approved vaccines and can begin to administer those as broadly as we can, as fast as we can. He added that Midland Health will not make the COVID vaccine mandatory. I would expect our staff to be very much interested and very willing to take the vaccine once the FDA has approved it. During the Unified Command Team press conference, he said there were 90 employees in quarantine, which is below the 100-plus experienced recently. He said 50 are positive for COVID-19 and another 40 have symptoms that are concerning enough that we require them to stay home from work and quarantine. Myers said that it is important for Midlanders to continue to see their primary care doctor during the pandemic, whether it is for a physical or other reasons. If you need a primary care doctor, we have a capacity available in Midland Health's primary care offices. You can find those providers at our website, midlandhealth.org, and look under primary care and we'll find you a physician. Midland Health officials also provide information Thursday about the Healthy Minds Behavioral Health Initiative. Myers said one of the concerns that healthcare officials have had is the stress and anxiety associated with dealing with isolation, whether it's from the loss of work or the difficulties in managing COVID-19 pandemic situations. Myers said that Midland Health has worked closely with Healthy Minds and Midland BHI.org to learn more about a telemedicine app that can help create opportunities for counseling and other behavioral health services. Healthy Minds has secured grant funding so that care can be provided on a limited basis for free. Myers said Midland Memorial staff is working hard to communicate with patients' families during this time while visitation is limited or non-existent. Midland Health's website on Thursday showed that 239 of 291 inpatient rooms were occupied, and the higher numbers and the staff stretched thin can create problems in communicating effectively. Myers said his team is trying to get into a regular routine with each patient of identifying a family member and communicating the patient's status on a regularly scheduled basis. Where we're challenged is if multiple family members are calling in or are trying to reach us at all times of the day, oftentimes for the same update information. We simply don't have the time and the systems in place to accomplish that. So we ask our families to identify a single communicator and to work on a schedule with our team members to communicate everything that's needed to be known about the patient on a regularly scheduled basis. And we would hope you can be understanding with us as we manage that. We recognize it's suboptimal. Nobody wants to minimize communication, but we are doing the best we can to keep people informed without overwhelming our staff. City, county have received reports of businesses operating above 50% by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. 10 days after businesses in Midland County were ordered to reduce occupancies to 50%, the City of Midland and Midland County have not received any reports of businesses operating above the allowed capacity. County Judge Terry Johnson and a city spokeswoman told the Reporter-Telegram that the Sheriff's Office and Police Department have not received any complaints of businesses not following the occupancy rule that went into effect on November 24th because of high coronavirus hospitalizations. Under Abbott's order, trauma service areas with COVID-19 hospitalizations above 15% of the total hospital capacity for 7 consecutive days must put additional restrictions in place. The Midland-Odessa TSA has been above that threshold since November 17th. Ector County is scheduled included in TSAJ and also received a notice from the Texas Department of Health Services that the county is required to lower occupancies. Odessa Mayor David Turner said during a press conference Tuesday that Odessa fire inspectors have begun checking businesses to make sure they're operating below 50% capacity. He said they've inspected supermarkets and restaurants and found those businesses to be following the occupancy rule. Midland will not be following suit and assigning fire inspectors to check businesses, according to Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. He said during a unified command team press conference on Thursday that random spot checks have led the city to believe most businesses are following the 50% occupancy rule. If we do have concerns and we get reports of people trying to break the rules over and over again, we may do some spot checks. But for the most part, what we've seen is people abiding by these arrangements and doing the things that are necessary. Midland and Odessa have also differed in their approaches to mask ordinances. The Odessa City Council Tuesday extended a mask ordinance for businesses, while the Midland City Council has twice voted down similar ordinances. Turner said Tuesday the Odessa Police Department has in the last week been called to 5 businesses because of individuals not following the order. He said officers speak to the individuals who were not wearing masks and they agreed to comply with the mandate. Midland and Odessa businesses will be required to remain at 50% occupancy until coronavirus hospitalizations fall below the 15% threshold for 7 consecutive days.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with another story from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, December 4th. City reports COVID death toll reaches 150. By Stuart Doreen. 2 more Midland County residents have died because of COVID-19-related issues, to bring the total number of deaths during the pandemic to 150. The city reported Thursday that a woman in her 80s died Saturday and a man in his 40s died Tuesday. The city reported that the man didn't have any underlying conditions. Both were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. The number of deaths reported this month has increased to 5. Also, it was the 15th daily report of deaths inside Midland County since November 11th, according to Reporter Telegram records. During that time, the city has reported a total of 47 deaths. At the same time, the Midland Health Department announced another 153 unconfirmed cases from Wednesday, bringing the total number of COVID cases inside Midland County during the pandemic to 10,820, confirmed and unconfirmed. The health department reported 63 confirmed cases on November 14th and 66 November 15th to bring the total confirmed cases through November 15th to 8,109. Due to the number of cases received each day, the staff is contacting positive cases and contacts from November 16th, the city reported on Thursday. The number of unconfirmed cases from November 16th through December 2nd is 2,711. The unconfirmed report is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results, according to the city. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. The Midland Health Department also reported 2,442 active cases on Thursday, and that the number of recovered cases topped 5,222. By the numbers, COVID in Midland Health numbers updated Thursday. COVID rooms occupied, COVID CCU 28, 90% occupied. COVID wards 65, 90% occupied. Total 93, down 4 from Wednesday. Percentage of COVID rooms occupied 90%. 7-day average 87%. COVID percent of occupied Thursday 32%, Wednesday 33%, Tuesday, 33%, Monday, 34%, Sunday, 31%, Saturday, 32%, November 27th, 32%, 7-day average, 32%. Ventilators. COVID CCU ventilators, 19. COVID wards, 6. Total, 25 of 41 ventilators in use. Hospital occupancy. Inpatient rooms, 291. Rooms occupied, 239. Percent occupied, 82%. 7-day average, 77%. Source, Midland Health.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 4, 2020. Susie's Secrets Revealed. Susie Hitchcock Hall, owner of Susie South 40 Confections, gives a tour of her factory to U.S. Representative Mike Conaway and other area business leaders October 16, 2017. Hitchcock Hall has released a new cookbook, Dancing in the Kitchen with Susie. The cookbook, which has more than 600 recipes, is $30 and is available at both Susie South 40 locations and at susiessouth40.com. A portion of the proceeds will go to the Midland Humane Coalition. A story on Dancing in the Kitchen with Susie will appear in a future edition. Parade organizers seek participants. Organizers of the Drive-Thru Holiday Parade are looking for businesses, organizations, or individuals to participate in the event planned for 6 to 9 p.m. December 19 at the Horseshoe parking lot. The Midland County Public Library and Midland County Sheriff's Office are hosting the event that will allow spectators to view stationary parade floats from their vehicles. Parade participants will remain with their float and not gather with others during the event, according to a press release from the county. Traffic will be restricted to one way only, with spectators entering the parking lot from Garfield Street and exiting onto the Interstate 20 service road. Those interested in decorating a float or vehicle for the parade should contact Hannah Johnson at hjohnson@mcounty.com or MCSO Sergeant Edie Subia at esubia@mcounty.com. Miss Casey's giving away free ornaments. Miss Casey's Wonderland will not be having personal visits from Santa Claus this year. Instead, free Christmas ornaments will be given to boys and girls, co-owner Becky McCraney said. The ornaments will be available until the store runs out, but there is an ample supply, co-owner Becky McCraney said. Parents or kids can ask for the free ornaments, and it can be personalized with names, she said. Miss Casey's Wonderland, 1012 Andrews Highway, is open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday. Santa is at Mall. Santa is at Midland Park Mall until Christmas Eve. Because of the pandemic, children will not be sitting on Santa's lap, but they will be able to talk with him. Social distancing also is required, and physical barriers will be put in place when 6 feet of distancing is impossible. Reservations are strongly encouraged in order to reduce wait times, encourage social distancing, and promote contactless payments. Reservations can be made online at www.whereisanta.com. Walk-up visits will be allowed as space allows throughout the day. Synergy Collecting Toys. Synergy Entertainment is partnering with Toys for Tots, Toys for Cops, and or Toys for. For each unwrapped toy donation, Synergy will offer a free movie ticket or $5 game card. Midland ISD runoffs, districts 1 and 4. Early voting times today, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Early voting location, Elections Office, County Annex Building, 2110 North A Street. Sample ballot, Midland ISD trustee, district 1, James E. Fuller, Michael Booker. Midland ISD trustee, District 4, Steve Vargas, Katie Wallace Joyner. 2020 Holiday Shipping Dates. Recommended sending by dates for expected delivery before December 25. USP Retail Ground Service, December 15. First Class Mail Service, December 18. Priority Mail Service, December 19. Priority Mail Express Service, December 23. Source, United States Postal Service. When it's open, U.S. Postal Service, downtown, 100 East Wall Street, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Village, 2315 West Louisiana Avenue, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. Graves, 3304 West Wadley Avenue, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. Claydesta, 612 Veterans Air Park Lane, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. GMF Midland, 1000 Loop 40, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday.
The Opinion Page. Guest View from the Dallas Morning News. This is Biden's moment to show he'll work with Republicans. If 2020 has been a year of shocks, it's also been a year of surprises. And we suspect that one such surprise for many people is Joe Biden's approach to taking office next month. Even under pressure from the far left of his party, the Democrat from Delaware is taking three distinctive steps to unite the country behind him as he prepares to be sworn in as the 46th president of the U.S. next month. If he continues on this path, he might just have an opportunity to govern rather than watch his administration crack apart at the rocks of national division. It's far too early, of course, to know how Joe Biden will lead. We'll have a better idea of his intentions once all of his cabinet picks are announced and once he stakes out clear budget objectives for the coming year. But one step he seems to be taking so far is picking people to staff his administration who are more capable public servants than ideological warriors. It's noteworthy his picks for Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, and Chief of Staff are wonks, better known for working in the background, than politicos, known for carrying forward some of the starker ideas of their party. The selection of his communications team is also winning high marks. And while some of the people he selected to work on his economic team did draw immediate fire from opponents late this past weekend, it's also worth noting that the big marquee names that would signal dramatic change and draw controversy and drama with their nominations, say Elizabeth Warren, have so far been left out of the selection process. Indeed, if the nervous chatter we hear from Washington is to be believed, some of the more cynical political players are starting to fear that Biden might actually try to govern by reaching across the aisle and focusing issues where he has a chance to win broad agreement, if not consensus. Another step Biden is taking is essentially sidestep the political sideswiping too common in Washington. Rather than the political wars we've gotten used to, he's instead signaling that he's willing to work with the opposition. More than one Democrat has worried out loud that the president-elect might be placing too much hope in working with Republicans in the Senate. But it seems to us what Biden is doing is keeping the door open to working with Mitch McConnell. And the third step Biden has taken since Election Day has been to speak directly to the American people in an attempt to lead toward greater cooperation while also projecting a sense of calm. Case in point, his remarks over the Thanksgiving holiday where he noted, "America is not a nation of adversaries, but of neighbors. Not of limitations, but of possibilities. Not of dreams deferred, but of dreams realized." We'll have to wait and see if Biden can build a coalition to govern or if he succumbs to the pressures that divide us. But we remark on the steps he has taken early on for the simple reason. All presidents face at least one serious crisis, and the ones who work to unify the country before that crisis washes over them have fared better in leading this country than those who squander their moments to unite the country. Our hope is that Biden uses his moment to overcome national divisions so that we're better able to deal with the pandemic. It will be difficult, if not impossible, to have a successful mass vaccination campaign, for example, without uniting the country against a deadly virus that couldn't care less about your political affiliation. One key takeaway from the national elections that saw Republicans win down-ballot races, even as Biden narrowly outpaced the president in key states, is that the country isn't looking for a radical political turn. In fact, it's looking for pragmatic solutions. And that likely requires turning the wheels of the national government so that Washington becomes functional again. We expect that in time there will be sharp debates over Biden's ideas on foreign policy, over his economic program, and other issues. But at the moment, photos like the one released after the election of Biden going for a bike ride seem intent on sending a specific message to Americans that the governing strategy of a Biden presidency might just be one that disarms critics. If so, that may just force Washington back to debating the merits of specific policies. We'll be better off if it does. Yes, coronavirus testing does work. A commentary by Megan McArdle. The White House is planning to host large parties again for the holidays, only this time officials are apparently not even bothering to test the guests in advance. Presumably, the administration has finally, belatedly, realized that testing alone won't protect people from the virus. Unfortunately, officials still haven't learned what they needed to, which is not tests don't work, but testing is a powerful tool with some major limitations. If they had absorbed that lesson, President Donald Trump might have led on an issue where there's still a whole lot of confusion. Instead, his administration apparently abandoned test everyone in favor of nihilistic shrug. Guests at the White House parties were informed will be served on individual plates from behind plexiglass partitions, which I suppose will at least give them something to lean on if they start feeling ill. Meanwhile, Americans remain confused. Take my smart and well-informed friend who asked me during the White House epidemic in October whether you could infect people while still testing negative. Or consider all the people who lined up to get a COVID test in the week before Thanksgiving so they could holiday indoors with a clean conscience. So let's clear things up. Yes, absolutely, you can test negative while you are contagious. For example, according to studies highlighted on the Abbott Labs website, the test that the White House was using could miss almost 10% of active infections. Some studies have put the rate of false negatives even higher. All the other available tests also fail some of the time, though the rates vary from test to test. The high rate of false negatives means that testing provides the most protection when it's deployed at the population level. At the group level, it's only a weak adjunct tactic to other precautions, and at the individual level, it's borderline useless. Start with the individuals. If you think you might have been exposed to COVID-19, for example, by flying home for the holiday, a negative test can't tell you it's safe to hang outdoors with your elderly parents. There's a significant risk that you simply aren't testing positive yet. And with case fatality rates still extremely high among older age groups, that's a risk you should take very seriously. For a larger group that has to meet in person, however, such tests are more useful. Even if the tests fail 1 in 10 times, they're still reducing the group's exposure by 90%. Meanwhile, other strategies can reduce it further. Masks, upgrades to the ventilation system, distancing, and hand washing. At the group level, we should think of testing the way medieval kings thought about fending off barbarians. They didn't just throw up a wall and call it a day, because what do you do if the enemy breaches the wall? So they built a layered defense, moats, catapults, boiling oil, plus some of the soldiers inside the walls. That's also the best way to hold COVID-19 at bay. Testing and masks and hand washing and distancing and good ventilation, or best of all, staying outdoors. Because if you instead try to use testing as a substitute for other safety measures, then eventually the virus is likely to slip through your lone line of defense and wreak mayhem within. But even better than group testing would be mass testing, because somewhat paradoxically, even this slipshod strategy might work if we could just test enough people. And with the advent of inexpensive, though somewhat less accurate, home tests, we're now at a point where we might be able to put a serious dent in transmission just by using tests. To understand how that might work, imagine that we start with 100,000 infected people, and on average, they'll each infect 3 more people if nothing is done. But if we don't do anything, instead, we start testing that misses 10,000 infections and catches 90,000 of them. If those people who test positive do the patriotic thing and immediately quarantine themselves, then in the second round of transmission, we would end up with 30 infections instead of 300,000. In the third round, having caught 27 of the second round infections, we would end up with 9,000 new infections instead of 900,000. Repeat that a few more times, and we've basically wiped out the novel coronavirus without doing much else. Of course, it's not practical to test the whole country at once, and even if it were, many people would refuse. But it's still true that the more tests we do, the safer we will be, so long as we are all understand what we're doing. Unfortunately, the White House, which ought to have been leading the way, instead chose the road to disaster, and even now too many Americans appear to be following in its path. Obituaries and death notices. Frederick Wayne Johnson, 71, of Midland, was called from his earthly home on Tuesday morning, November 24th. Due to COVID-19, there will not be a funeral. However, the family will have a memorial celebration at a later date. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Ramon Leyba Sr., 75, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, November 22nd at Midland Memorial Hospital. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Friday, December 4th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Jose Joe Sertucci Jimenez passed away on November 3rd in Lubbock after a brief illness. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, December 5th at 1 p.m. at Northwestern Baptist Church in Midland. Graveside services for Milton Cooks will be Saturday, December 5th at 11 a.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Services are entrusted to Jackie Warren Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, December 4th, 2020. Section A. Numbers continue to soar in Odessa. Medical staff committed, but exhaustion is setting in. By Federico Martinez. High-risk COVID-19 patients in Odessa are so far responding favorably to an experimental antibody treatment given to them this week at Medical Center Health System, health officials announced Thursday. Four COVID-19 patients this week were given doses of the monoclonal antibody treatment bamlanivimab at the hospital, MCHS Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said during a Zoom news conference Thursday. Those patients have reported that their fevers and other symptoms started to decrease within a couple of hours of receiving the dose, Timmons said. That's a positive sign. MCHS, which received 60 doses of bamlanivimab last week, is the only health facility in Odessa that has received the drug, Timmons and representatives for Odessa Regional Medical Center said. Officials at both hospitals said they don't know when more doses will become available. The treatment is currently only being offered as outpatient treatment for patients with mild to moderate COVID-19 symptoms who are at high risk for progressing to severe symptoms or even hospitalization, health officials said. The good news arrives at a time when COVID-19 cases and deaths continue to soar in Odessa. The escalating problem prompted Mayor David Turner 2 weeks ago to pass an ordinance limiting business occupancy to 50% and instituting a mask mandate, which requires employees and customers in businesses to wear face coverings. Turner said the ordinance and mask mandate, which City Council Tuesday unanimously voted to extend indefinitely, will remain in effect until COVID-19 cases decrease significantly. So far, no decrease has occurred, said health officials, who admit they fear cases will skyrocket during the next 2 weeks due to Thanksgiving weekend gatherings. As of Thursday, MCHS officials said they are currently housing 89 COVID-19 patients, 33 who are in critical condition and 27 who are on ventilators, Timmons said. The hospital has 169 test results pending. ORMC CEO Stacy Brown said the hospital currently is housing 26 COVID-19 patients, 16 who are in critical care and 5 who are on ventilators. They currently have 288 tests pending, Brown added. Health officials Thursday admitted they and their staff are exhausted, but despite constant public criticism and verbal and physical threats, they are determined to continue to do their jobs. Ector County Health Authority Dr. B.A. Ginadu said medical staff in the county are under tremendous stress. Not only do doctors and nurses deal with the ill and dying every day, they fear for their own families' health and safety. It's important that health administrators and staff support and remind each other their work is important and they are appreciated, Ginadu said. It affects us and our immediate family, but you just have to put your head down and do your work. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan added, I know there is a bigger mission involved. I know this is what I have to do for my community. That's what keeps me going. Starbright Village is open in Odessa, by Michael Bauer. This year may have been different and chaotic for most people in the Permian Basin due to the pandemic. However, one thing that hasn't been canceled this year is Starbright Village. Starbright Village, which for the last 30-plus years has entertained the people of Odessa and West Texas with a massive display of lights, opened up for this season Thursday night. There were a few minor differences that are in place this year due to COVID-19, which included the opening ceremony that went virtual this year. The difference this year is that we've taken several precautions to widen the walkway so that people can go through the walkway should they choose to, Director of City of Odessa's Parks and Recreation, Steve Patton, said. This year, the sidewalks will be wider with signs encouraging people to social distance in order to make sure no one gets sick. We'd prefer if everyone drove and had a better experience if they drove through the Crystal Tunnel, Patton said, but we will monitor the crowd and make sure that people are social distancing and wearing their masks. There is a heavy concentration of people in a small space. This is a mile long, and we need to have it to where everyone is enjoying it and not getting sick. We've worked hard for many months to make sure everyone enjoys this. Every year, there's usually one addition to the display at Starbright Village, and this year, it is the Crystal Tunnel. The Crystal Tunnel was designed to where it's similar to the opening of the Superman movie, Patton said. I got the idea from that. You experience it best going through it as a drive-through. That's new, and that's thousands of lights. We're pushing about over 80 displays, and we have over 300,000 light bulbs that light up this park. With that amount of lights and everything, it should come as no surprise to how much work and manpower it takes to put the displays together every year, as well as maintain it throughout the holiday season. Once we get everything up, the real work begins, Patton said. We have to connect the lights. Light bulbs may come undone, and we have to get everything ready. What takes us a month to put up, January 2nd, we start taking it down and in storage, and it only takes 2 weeks. It's funny how fast it takes to take it down. Starbright Village's hours are 7 to 11 p.m. every day until January 1st, and it is located at Odessa's McKinney Park off I-20. Donations are accepted at the entrance. With everything that has happened this year, Patton is hopeful of Starbright Village brightening everyone's spirit this season. It's a quote from one of our council members this year. Starbright Village is needed more than ever, Patton said. I think that's a great quote and observation. Starbright Village was designed to be a drive-through, and it's free, even though we do take donations. But it's something that attracts tourists, and it's something that I hope is an inspiration to people who visit. That's what's important to me. ECISD to start rapid COVID testing next week, by Ruth Campbell. Rapid COVID-19 tests are expected to start next week for Ector County ISD's 4,200 employees. Superintendent Scott Murray said the state of Texas has made the tests available and results are available within 3 to 15 minutes. It is self-administered for adults and children at the high school level. For children at the elementary and middle school level, we will have a nurse who will administer those tests, Murray said. If any staff member begins to show COVID symptoms during the workday, Murray said the test will be provided at no cost to that staff member. Once the results are available, he said the district will be able to take quick action by quarantining that individual if they are positive and cleaning the area where that person may have been. Once our processes are tried and tested with our adults, then we will begin to administer those tests to children, to the students. So parents, you'll have information forthcoming about that. But again, next week we will start with the 4,200 employees in ECISD, making that test available in each of our sites. Any adult who begins to display symptoms during the workday will provide that test for them. It will allow us to be a bit more responsive to the growing concerns that we have as a community in regard to COVID-19, Murray said. He said the tests have a 97% accuracy rate. He added that nurses in the district are receiving instruction this week on the test. Even though the test is self-administered by adults, you have to do that with a nurse present. So the nurse will guide you through the process and ensure that the test is done correctly, Murray said. School choice also was discussed during the call. The window for applications is now open. The schools are open to all students, and applications must be completed online by the parent or guardian, a news release said. There are two definitions in the process. Accepted list. The lottery ran, and the student was selected to fill a seat at one of their options. Wait list. The lottery ran, and the student was not selected to fill a seat and is therefore assigned to the wait list. For elementary students, grades pre-kindergarten through fifth grade, the options are Austin Montessori, Blackshear Health and Wellness, Cameron Dual Language, pre-K through sixth grade, Gale Pond Alamo, STEAM Extended Year Academy, Hayes Academic STEAM Academy, Milam Visual and Performing Arts, Reagan Academic, Travis Career and Leadership Academy, and Zavala Career and Community. Ector College Prep Success Academy is open to middle school students in grades 6 through 8, while George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa, Odessa Collegiate Academy, and OC Techs, Odessa Career and Technical Early College High School, are options for high school students, the release said. Saturday, SpaceX has a launch where two students will have patches they created make their way to the International Space Station. But this will not be the first time we've had students participate in this experience, Murray said. We actually have a little bit of a history. Students over the last several years have had opportunities to design patches for NASA, and those patches have made their way to the International Space Station. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 9,466. Ector County negative, 33,770 out of 43,897 tested, with 661 pending, 151 deaths. Recovered, 7,820. Active, 1,495. ECISD daily cases, 6 students, 10 staff. Midland County, as of Monday, 7,654 confirmed, 145 deaths. Texas, 1,215,113 confirmed, with 11,017,447 tested. Total Texas deaths, 22,000. U.S. cases, 13,822,249 total confirmed, and 272,525 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Grandmother needs help. With only 14 days to go in the 26th year of the Empty Stocking Fund, our goal of $100,000 is not met and won't be met without your help. Funds stay in Ector County and help the needy families during the annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Funds go to help people like Letitia, not her real name, a great-grandmother caring for her 3 great-granddaughters while their mother is in prison. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund can help families like that of Letitia have a happy holiday. Donations may be mailed or delivered to Salvation Army Community Center or the Odessa American. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2 million. You can donate online at tinyurl.com/VH5FJDZ. OC Law Enforcement Training Academy sets live streams. Odessa College's Law Enforcement Training Academy will hold recruitment events via Facebook Live for those interested in a career in law enforcement. The LETA live streams will be available at www.facebook.com/Odessa College from noon to 1 p.m. December 8th and from 6 to 7 p.m. December 15th. The recruiting sessions for the Spring Academy will feature general information about the program, pre-admission requirements, application form, entrance process, and viewer interactive discussions with OC LETA faculty and an LETA graduate, a news release said. The Academy is currently taking applications, and interested persons may access the Academy's information, including the application form, on the Odessa College website at tinyurl.com/YXXD7DXK. For more information, call 432-335-6314 during the business hours of 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Thursday. Local News Roundup. Early voting. Early voting for the runoff election is scheduled for 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. today, Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. December 7th through 9th, and 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. December 10th and 11th. Locations for early voting include Ector County Courthouse Annex, Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Westlake Hardware is not a location. Election Day locations will include the Global Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Market at the Gardens. Market at the Gardens has been scheduled from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Aldridge Gardens in Midland. There will be homemade gems and jellies, jewelry, cupcakes, clothing, and more. Visit tinyurl.com/Y6J76REP. Exhibition and Arts Program. Ellen Knoll Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled the following events. Sunday, Adventures in Art, Painting, for children ages 6 through 12. Fee is $20. December 12th, 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., Empty Bowls Decorating. This is a community-wide fundraiser benefiting the West Texas Food Bank. Fee is $5. All ages welcome. Through March 7th, 2021, Exhibition, Betrothed, 250 Years of Wedding Fashions. Admission is free. Art to Go is an online program that is for second graders. This month's artist we are focusing on is Pablo Picasso. Watch Pablo Picasso video inspired story time art activity, and don't forget to pick up a free to go kit that comes with oil pastels, limited supply, or crayons and paper. Pick up your art to go kits at the museum front desk during museum hours. To register for classes or for more information, call Annie Stanley at 550-9696 extension 213 or visit noelartmuseum.org. Christmas Show. Bronco Legacy has scheduled Jingle All the Way at 7:30 p.m. December 11th and 12th at Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for students and children. Tickets are available at the door. To purchase tickets in advance, call 456-6474. Visit www.facebook.com/Odessa High School Choirs. Teen mom charged with shooting her baby with pellet. A teenage mother was arrested after she reportedly shot her 9-month-old daughter with a pellet gun. Scarlett Mitchell, 19, was charged with injury to a child, a third-degree felony. Mitchell was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Wednesday, jail records show. She had one bond totaling $10,000 and posted bail Wednesday. Ector County Sheriff's Office investigator Chris Bell was asked to assist Child Protective Services, CPS, with an ongoing investigation at 3:31 p.m. October 8th in the 1900 block of Mockingbird Lane about a child being shot with a BB gun, an ECSO affidavit detailed. CPS reportedly requested Mitchell to bring her daughter out for a visual inspection, and she complied. CPS and Bell saw a small, dark red bruise on the left torso of the 9-month-old girl. Mitchell stated that it was a birthmark and wasn't a bruise, the affidavit stated. She stated she didn't shoot her baby and didn't know of such an incident. Later that day, at around 10 p.m., CPS reportedly contacted Bell and advised that Mitchell would be willing to come in for an interview to state how she shot her baby with a pellet gun. At 2:41 p.m. November 30th, Mitchell came in to ECSO for an interview, the affidavit stated. During the interview, Mitchell stated that on or about October 5th, she intentionally and knowingly pointed a spring-loaded pellet gun at her daughter and stated, "I'm going to shoot my baby." Mitchell pulled the trigger and struck her daughter in the lower left torso with a hard rubber pellet, which caused her pain and discomfort, the affidavit stated.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.